This is KBOO's The Voice of the Middle East. صوت الشرق الأوسط من إذاعة كيبو و صدای خبرمیانه از رادیو KBOO.
طلق بابنا طلونا سيارتنا بين ربوعنا خلونا تحت السهرات جوانا وطلق بابنا طلونا بين ربوعنا فيات غنينا وعلى مياه لقينا على أقصى ما خلو من زهد الطير الشام نحن حكايات في بال منا نغمات موال نحن حكايات
صلى صلى
طوب نحن حكايات في بال منا نغمات موال
نحن حكايات في بال منا نغمات
لما المسمات نحلاله بين الغابات بينات لما المسمات نحلاله بين الغابات بينات النقبة
Good evening and welcome to another installment of The Voices of the Middle East. This is Gudar Zektedari, your host. As you probably have noted with announcement during the news hour, main guest tonight, Roya Hakakian, the author of A Journey from the Land of No, was not able to attend the interview. She's on the air as we speak, and but fortunately, I was able to basically, with help of her publicist, secure a very interesting program tonight, and my guest that I will be talking to shortly is a litigating attorney for some of the Abu Ghraib prisoners who are suing the government in U.S. court, and we will be talking to Sharif Akil in a moment and get some information about the case and the situation in Iraq, because he just came back from Iraq. At meantime, I like to kind of touch base about different issues that are happening in the Middle East. Obviously, things are not the way it should be at this time of an election year in the U.S., but surprisingly, President Bush is still leading, and that is one of the surprises and one of the puzzle that, as some of these pundits are saying, I bet a stake for anybody who find why this is happening the way it is happening. I have my my own reservations and in this regard, and really I sometimes question what is really liberals and Democrats are doing in this country, and who are the audience and who are the targets of all these new and old establishments that are trying to basically make the case that this president is not to the benefit of the people in this country. And probably you have heard that a poll and research that was actually done by International Study Department at University of Maryland and an international polling group came out yesterday showing that with the margin of 2-1, John Kerry is the most favorable president for the rest of the world. Among 33 countries that they were polled, only 3 countries selected Bush over Kerry. And these 3 countries, I believe, they are Poland, Nigeria, and Philippines. The other 30 countries with majority, with kind of a slight number, they all picked John Kerry to be a better leader. And quite frankly, if you assume that U.S. is the a superpower that runs the whole world, and he has the might of going anywhere without a need to have a support from United Nations, and it has the right and power to bully the world, then maybe the president of the United States should be elected by all the people in the world. And that would be another, I guess, a topic for the next century, probably, once we annexed all the independent countries around the world, which worth something, as our additional states. But after all these, I guess, sarcasm, the question for me is how come Democrats cannot make the case and cannot really get the people to listen here in this country? Unfortunately, for the people who are listening to the both sides, they cannot make a distinction. Last week, specifically, I was really disturbed by comments made by John Kerry regarding the Palestinian and Middle East issues. I heard him talking about, for example, the situation in Iraq, and this was the day that the 1,000th soldier was killed, and when it was asked, and he was trying to respond to it, and says, "Well, we have lost more than 1,000 people in war on terror." The question is, I mean, was it really war on terror, or it was war for Halliburton? It was war for oil. And how can the candidate opposing the existing situation, existing system, who took all these people there and got them killed, cannot make the case that this war was not about terror, this war was not about the weapons of mass destruction, and this war was only because Halliburton and other companies that are supporting the Republicans were basically building this whole scenario that is now, everybody knows it's lost, and everybody knows it was a lie, but the opponent of the president is not even going there to make the case. So these are all, I guess, the reasons that he's not gaining any momentum. And even people like myself, who had some hopes that there would be some changes, there would be differences, are kind of getting disappointed. And in my opinion, these are the questions that liberals and Democrats have to answer if they want the vote of people who are independent like myself. We're not for granted. Our vote is not for granted. And I mean, at some point in the past, I was very upset with Ralph Nader running, assuming that this was not good. But now I see that really, after Howard Dean and Dennis Kucinich went basically out of the race, John Kerry turned totally to the right, and he needs someone to push him and challenge him. And this is basically what I think and what I had for opening of the show tonight. Let's listen to a brief piece of music, and then I will bring our guest online. Thank you. As I was announcing before, tonight I have a very special guest for our show, and he is Sharif Akil, and he's a litigating attorney for the abused victims of Abu Ghraib prison, and I believe they are the first group who have sued in U.S. court. And in addition, Sharif has just came back from Iraq for fact-finding and documentation of the case. Welcome, Sharif, to the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let me start. Unfortunately, I didn't get the email that you were supposed to send me, but I would kind of ask you to introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Sharif Akil. I'm an attorney. I practice law in the state of Michigan. I've been involved in the civil rights and discrimination cases, especially since September 11. And my practice has now actually turned upside down since the Abu Ghraib scandal broke out, where now I have me in conjunction with the Center of Constitutional Rights and a law firm, Montgomery McCracken in Pittsburgh, we filed a lawsuit, a class action lawsuit in San Diego, California, on behalf of all of the detainees in Abu Ghraib and elsewhere. And we're estimating it's between 50 to 100,000 detainees that have been held. So we're right now going through the investigation process to determine how many of those detainees were wronged and subjected to unspeakable acts.
I believe you are now pursuing a case. How many clients do you have at this case?
Well, right now it's a class action, so it represents technically every detainee that you know in Iraq. Now, keep in mind that it's the focus of inquiry has been Abu Ghraib, but our findings indicate that there were at least 23. Detention centers. So it includes all these detainees, and we don't have an exact figure, but you know it's well over 100 at this time that we have identified by name. Then the rest of the individuals are those individuals that are just similarly situated. You know that they were that they are. That we're going to get their names later.
Can you give a short? Basically, information about the kind of abuses that happened there, and then we'll go on with more questions.
It's you know we found some very disturbing series of acts that took place. We just came back from Iraq, August 21, and despite what was stated that everything ceased, we interviewed a boy. Who was fourth grade elementary education, who was taken to another detention center other than Abu Ghraib, stripped nude, made to clean bathrooms on all fours, and he was sodomized from the back and asked to dance. Forcing him to, he ended up crying, and he was placed in closets in stressful positions. We talked to many men. One man broke down in tears. He's over 60 years of age. He was fasting, and a woman was sodomizing him in the back with bottles and objects. It was just horrendous. We heard of boys. We interviewed a boy in Abu Ghraib village who was being urinated on to wake up in the morning. And what is so disturbing is that these so-called interrogation tactics had nothing to do with getting information. To me, they were just sadistic types of conduct, and it's unfortunate that these type of actions were visited on a people who have never seen such conduct. Another disturbing fact pattern that we discovered was the widespread looting that was taking place. Generally, just to give you an idea, when we were there, we maximized our efforts to interview detainees, and so we were interviewing about 3 to 4 a day when we were there, and they included a wide spectrum of individuals, from doctors to lawyers to elderly persons to young boys to women and to city council people to pharmacists, and all of them from different parts of Iraq, Baghdad to Mosul to Najaf to Fallujah, and their accounts vary. But one thing was prevalent, was that usually there would be a raid at night between 12 and 3 in the morning. American personnel would bomb the house, bomb the door, come in, look for the dad, beat up the dad in front of the kids. In one instance, the dad's not there. They take the wife in. Then they ask, where's the money? Where's the gold? And then they're taken, subjected to horrendous acts. After 5 months, then they're released. And they're not given back their money and their gold. And the unfortunate thing is that many of these individuals don't have receipts, don't have proof. Iraq doesn't have a sophisticated banking system, so they can't prove it. And they've lost their life savings, and they were just, you know, they just lived a nightmare for no reason whatsoever.
Let me ask you this question. Are you kind of suing on American court system and American law, or you are using some international litigation?
Yeah, no, we're suing under the Alien Tort Claim Act. It's in the United States law, and it was just the recent Supreme Court ruling came down, which is very timely, which stated that the U.S. court doors are open for aliens to bring claims in federal court in the United States for acts that they were subjected to which violated the Geneva Convention and norms of international law. I wanted to mention one thing regarding a disturbing finding, was that we found individuals who were kind of more related. There was a questionnaire, but there was a series of questions. Are you Sunni or Shia? Do you pray or you don't pray? Do you drink? Do you watch pornography? And then if you don't do that, if you don't watch pornography, and one other thing, do you use your finger when you pray? Like, and if you use your finger, I get, you know, when people pray, sometimes they claim there's only one God. I mean, they assert there's one God, so they have one finger. It's like a ritual. And when you do that, there seems to be, like, these persons were subjected to more of this type of sexual humiliation than persons who did not, you know, pray or did or were or had girlfriends or whatever. So that was strange. You know, we interviewed clergy that were taken in and stripped naked, and that was very disturbing, and made to feed women who were naked. It was outrageous, and we're right now just trying to gather the evidence on that. I'm sorry about that.
You are basically collecting information about what kind of treatment was offered to these poor people, but have you also tried to find out what kind of training or sensitive training the American soldiers and American contractors? There are claims that some of these interrogators are just private contractors. What kind of training are they going through? Because the reason I'm asking is that I know that, for example, a book called The Arab Mind that's being taught at
right.
Some of the military educational location, including
right.
It has references to sexuality and the question of how Muslims are and how Arabs are and how they need to be treated. Do you follow those kind of education and training that these guys are getting?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. That book you referred to had essentially a two-pronged test, how to destroy the Arab male. One, you know, a male has honor and dignity, and two is that sex is taboo. So what you do is you strip this male, or this the Arab male, from his dignity, and you sexually humiliate him. I'm familiar with that. Our case is against contractors Kachi, which furnished the interrogators, and Titan, which furnished the translators. They are supposed to be certified in interrogation. The recent reports indicate that the recent military report, the Army report, indicates that some interrogators were not trained adequately, and this is critical. Especially when your job is to try to gather information, it was clear that it because the nature of the acts were to me prevalent in different detention centers, it was clear to me that there was some kind of policy in place to subject these individuals to these acts.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So you are collecting this information from them and pursuing a case. Tell me more about what you saw when you were in Iraq, as far as regular life there, and basically with these changes after the end of June. Now, are there people still being detained by Iraqis or by American forces?
Well, it was a very, very disturbing trip. There's a lot of civil unrest there. You hear gunshots in the streets. You hear bombing activity outside of Baghdad and within Baghdad, and people are anxious. What is interesting is that the people that I talked to, you know, they stated when Saddam Hussein was toppled, you know, by Americans, you know, they said, let's give America a chance. This is maybe a good thing, but it's the subsequent acts, the prison abuse scandal, and then the raids at night, and just the everyday interactions. Many of them have now grown very anxious and very fearful, and this is unfortunately the sentiment that I gathered there. I'm hopeful that we do change that, and we become more sensitive to a culture there, especially during these hard times.
I just wanted to announce our phone number here for the listeners if they want to call in and ask questions for Mr. Sharif Akil, who is a litigating attorney who is pursuing the Abu Ghraib abuse victims in U.S. courts. The number here is 503-231-8187. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. We'll listen to a brief short of music, and then we'll be back with your questions.